Hello and welcome to the Thanksgiving episode of the Texas Tribune Tribcast. I am political reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hello, Elise.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Gobble, gobble.
And Ben Philpott, who is covering the governor's race for KUT News, based here in Austin, and the Texas Tribune.
I was told there would be pie.
This week, instead of everybody bringing a different topic, we're kind of doing a topic mashup since it's a short week. So we'll start with Tom Schieffer's exit from the race for governor and Bill White's possible entry into said race.
Is it really possible, though, Elise?
I think we're so far past
probable,
possible. You know,
likely.
It would be such a. It would. I mean, think of the alternative universe where Bill White says, "I'm going to consider this race." People that I meet when I walk down the street have said, "Why don't you run for governor?" And I've decided that I'll consider that. What if he said no? I mean, of course he's going to say yes.
It would be such a burn on Tom Schieffer. Ha ha, got you to drop out of the race.
Well, actually,
no, I'm not getting in.
There was actually a moment in Tom Schieffer's press conference where he said, "You know, I'm not going to speak for." I had this meeting with Bill White. I told him that I would not run if he will run. I'm not going to say that he will run, but I am dropping out. And I said, well, what if he doesn't run? What if we come up next week and Bill White says he doesn't run? And Tom Schieffer just said, I'll call you back.
Now, so do we need to say goodbye, say a fond farewell to Tom Schieffer, pay him any tribute?
Well, I think the failure here is instructive. I mean, you know, as a template for a candidate who's going to win in Texas with a Democratic label, he's not a bad template. You know, you can get into the personality stuff and whether this works or not, but you basically have a conservative Democrat, some history of public service, some ability to raise money, put an asterisk in this space, and some ability to appeal to independents in a race against a Republican in November. Now, part of the problem was Democrats had some antipathy towards somebody who was a former partner of George Bush's, who said he voted for George Bush over Ann Richards, Gary Morrow, Al Gore, and John Kerry, as Schieffer did. But Schieffer actually said the politics were working. What wasn't working was his ability to raise money. So if you had a candidate like that who fit some of those molds, who also didn't have the George Bush problem, but did have the ability to raise money, you'd have maybe the template for a Democrat who was at least competitive in November. This is what Bill White's going to be.
But he was delusional if he believed the politics was working and the only problem was that he had no money. The politics were not working.
So what do you think about the politics weren't working? The George Bush thing and the money.
Well, the George Bush thing and the money, also the complete lack of ideas. The only person with ideas on the Democratic side to this point has been Hank Gilbert.
Right.
Vince Leibovitz, you owe me one for saying that.
Right.
the reality is that Schieffer had no distinct ideas that you could point to and say, okay, he has a plan for Texas or a plan for anything, even a plan for himself.
His plan was something needs to change.
Right.
And he also didn't demonstrate.
But didn't say what needed to change,
exactly.
And didn't say what it needed to change to.
Right.
And he didn't demonstrate a depth of knowledge on the issues when he was asked at his rollout or his announcement about CHIP. He didn't seem to know what was actually happening with CHIP during the legislative session.
This is the Children's Health Insurance Program.
Right.
Well, he spent all of his time in Japan and Australia.
Sure.
Texas is a big place, but last time I looked, neither of those was in Texas. And
right.
And his knowledge of the ground level issues of Texas was going to be a ramp up at best between now and Election Day. And that's just not good enough at a time when there are big pressing issues that we expect Kay Bailey Hutchison to discuss, you know, let alone Tom Schieffer. And we want everybody who is in this race to talk about the big issues that face Texas. Let me say a couple things about what you just said, Ross, which is I don't think that the Netroots Democrats, the base Democrats, to the degree that there are passionate Democrats still in Texas who are active in campaigns, and there are, they tend to be base Democrats, not conservative Democrats. The theory here is that Schieffer was somehow going to win over those people. There was no way that he was going to win over the sort of burnt orange, Texas blue, Lone Star Project.
How big a deal are those guys in a primary anyway?
Who? The
Netroots Democrats?
The
base Democrats?
Democrats?
Well, they're
Democrats. I make a distinction between the Netroots Democrats and the base Democrats.
I don't make much of a distinction because they all play in the same pool. They may some swim in the deep end and some swim in the shallow, but the fact is they're all essentially the more liberal wing of the party, just as in the Republican primary, who tends to turn out as the more Republican, right-wing wing of that party tends to turn out in greater numbers with greater passion. For Tom Schieffer to have won that primary, he had to have appealed to the left word base of the Democratic Party, and he showed absolutely no sign of doing so. And he seems, even today, to not fully appreciate that he had to connect with those people in order to win a primary, even against the likes of Kinky Friedman and Hank Gilbert?
This is a really interesting question. It's going to happen in the Republican primary, too, is if you go too far toward the, let's call it the base or the wing of your party, if you go to the right wing in the Republican primary, if you go to the left wing in the Democratic primary, do you make yourself the leader in a primary only to make yourself ineligible in November?
I mean, ask Rick Perry.
You run so far right. Well, you know, do you run so far right? You run so far left. Pivoting in the past. Right.
But
well, he didn't need to pivot 3 years ago because I mean he didn't. I don't know that he did pivot, picking up 39% of the statewide vote.
Which makes Bill White such an interesting question, though, right? So now there's talk that of the likelihood that Houston Mayor Bill White will enter this race by December 4th.
It'd be nice to drop possibly and perhaps.
Right? He's doing this 10-day waiting period,
it's
right?
It's sort of like Hillary Clinton's listening tour.
Right. Yeah. Please weigh in. Please tell me what you think I should run for.
Tell me how much money you'd be willing to give me if I were to run.
That's a lot of this right there.
But remember that, again, just to stay on Schieffer for 1 second before we pivot to White, the other problem with Schieffer, which White doesn't necessarily solve, is that, to quote our friend Ken Herman, what he said about Tony Sanchez, that Tom Schieffer had the Bob Krueger-like ability to take a crowd in a frenzy and whip them into a coma.
Yeah, this is...
And the fact is, the pivot from Tom Schieffer to Bill White in the excitement department is not
natural.
Much of a pivot at all.
Right.
That's right.
Right?
We're at an accounting convention. It's just amazing.
The idea that somehow Bill White is the savior is hilarious until he opens his mouth.
We've gone from the stamp collector to the coin collector. It's just really fascinating.
You know, I'm told, though, that he's very good on television... and in church. So his well-produced campaign
White.
Ads, right. When he was reelected by margins of 91 and 86% in Houston, on television, apparently he can communicate well. And so a lot of the statewide race is still waged over the air. So that's one. And then B, apparently he's very good in churches.
Well, he's actually quite a religious person, not religious in the sense of, you know, he's no Joel Osteen, but he's religious in the sense that he takes his faith very seriously, and his faith manifests itself in the way he views his world, to the point that some of his critics on the left have accused him of being excessively moral. And so it's interesting.
Always a hard swipe in politics.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're just too moral.
That keeps you out of the South Carolina governor's race, I think.
That's
I
right.
guess.
Oh.
Bring it, not, these days it certainly does, right. I do think that White's faith is going to be an interesting question here. You know, is to what degree does his embrace of faith put off some of the people who traditionally
Well, what's the contrast?
Believe.
I mean, you know, this is about electoral politics is about differences. I mean, somebody comes in and says, you know, I'm not as moral as he is. I don't think that, I don't know.
Well, but you understand.
I'm thinking of Kinky Friedman.
I go hiking in Appalachia.
You understand every week, church, that that there are some people who see that the line between politics and religion should be solid and not dotted. And so you even had criticism of Barack Obama, wearing his faith and his attendance in church on his sleeve during the presidential campaign.
I just have a hard time seeing that being a liability in Texas.
Right.
It could be an asset. I mean, you can pull a moderate who goes to church every week and doesn't mind the fact that a Democrat is now coming out talking about how what they do on Sunday helps shape
other
their
than
world
watch view. Football, right?
Right.
I think what changes here, though. I mean, the big change in the table here is that what was seen by us and by a lot of people as a non-competitive race, or competitive only under limited circumstances, now looks like competitive under less limited circumstances. I mean, this could really be interesting. The Democratic primary looks at this moment to me like Bill White and the Four Dwarfs. And
you think there will be a primary. You don't think that Kinky and Hank Gilbert and those guys are going to be persuaded
by
Boyd Ritchie.
That's not my favorite, Farouk Shami.
Farouk Shami to get out of the race. I mean, that's the question.
I don't know that they will. I mean, they're interesting in several regards. Kinky Friedman has the highest name ID in the polls. He's the one voters know about. That's worth something. Farouk Shami has $10 million,
That's worth $10 million.
That's worth exactly $10 million. That buys name ID. I mean, that's Hank Gilbert, as you said, has the message but doesn't seem to be able to get it out. So, I mean, there's some interesting things here, but Bill White's sort of the tallest of the candidates at this moment. But then you get into a prospect of a general election that is at least interesting at the outset. I don't know if it'll still be interesting in September or October, how this will all play out, who wins the Republican primary, et cetera, but Bill White's a different sort of candidate than Tom Schieffer or any of the other four.
I just want to note that this is turning rapidly into the heir apparent governor's race. You've got Rick Perry, Governor Goodhair. You've got Kay Bailey Hutchison, often referred to as the Breck Girl. You've got Kinky Friedman, whose nickname is based on his own kinky hair. You've got Farouk Shami, who made his money through hair, and you got Bill White, whose distinct lack of it is one of his most noticeable features.
Well, you guys saw this.
How did we end up here?
You saw this text that John Sharp was sending around. This is John Sharp, the former controller and now U.S. Senate candidate, if there's a race. What we have now is a gov race between good hair, big hair, no hair, and let me do your hair. So, well, there you go.
Sharp continues to make us laugh.
Ben, you have done some reporting this week, actually, about how Bill White's entrance affects other Democrats down the ballot. What have you found?
Well, and you know, and we've talked about this in previous weeks, the idea that if you have an absolute nobody, or at least a perceived absolute nobody on the Democratic ticket next November, how is this going to affect some of the state house races specifically in marginal Democratic districts or districts where a Republican would 9 times out of 10 get elected? And, you know, I talked to some of the kind of Democratic leadership in the House, and they all seem to think that that if Bill White does get in the race, that he provides a good safety net, even to the point of Representative Pete Gallego told me that if Chuck Hobson had just waited 2 more weeks and found out that Bill White was going to run, that Hobson could have remained a Democrat and still won his district.
This is an East Texas House member who jumped parties 2 weeks ago, I guess.
Thank you, Footnote Ross.
You believe
Mr. Parenthetical.
You believe that Hobson would have stayed as a Democrat if White had been in a race?
I don't think so. I think a lot of these guys. I mean, Gallego's point's well taken, but you know, I think Hobson looked at this thing and said, "This Democratic label on my bumper sticker looks really, really bad in my part of East Texas right now with this president, with this health plan, with this economy, with this war in Afghanistan, and it just doesn't look great to me." The Republicans are going to help me here. If they can get me out of a March primary, then I'm going to be a rep again. If I get out of a March primary as a Democrat, I've got another hammer and tongs fight, just like the ones I've fought the last 2 cycles in November. I think he took the easier path.
Although, ironically, the person who's running against him in the Republican primary might have been his Republican opponent in the fall if he'd stayed as a Democrat, and he may lose in the Republican primary
exactly
to the same guy he might have lost to in the fall.
Now he's in a Republican primary running on a Democratic voting record, which is always tough.
Well, you know, I think that Pete Gallego did make one argument which you could probably draw a much straighter line to, which is that Christy Thibault, mm-hmm. who a Houston rep who is going to be in a very tough race, will receive, if Bill White jumps in the race, will receive a pretty, I would say you can measure that boost.
Well, and we've talked a lot about this story that is one of my favorite stories told to me in politics that may be not true, but I don't care because it's so good, that I think illustrates this point. It goes back to 2001 when John Sharp was out looking for a Hispanic to run for governor in 2002. This is pre-Tony Sanchez. But it was post-1998 when Sharp lost to Perry for lieutenant governor, and according to many people, attributed his loss to the lack of Dan Morales on the ballot as attorney general, and was convinced, so the story goes, he was not going to go through another cycle and run without a high-profile Hispanic on the ticket. And so he drove down to San Antonio to see Henry Cisneros, again, as the story goes, and said, "Henry, I think you ought to run for governor." And Henry said, "Really, do you think I could win?" And Sharp said, "No, but I could." And the thought here was that having a high-profile Hispanic at the top of the ticket would stabilize Democratic turnout, would in fact even bring some people out. And even if Texas was not ready to elect a Hispanic for governor, Sharp would be able to keep enough of the votes that switched to Republican in the governor's race that he would in fact win. Well, to some degree, Christy Thibault may as well have gone to see Bill White and said, "Mayor, I think you should run for governor." And White would have said, "Do you think I could win?" And Thibault would say, "No, but I could."
Right.
And so, by the way, would Joel Redman running against Ken Legler in
a
rematch from 6?
I don't think Redman's going to run again, but I think Legler will have an opponent.
But if Redman were to run, or whoever the Redman stand-in would be, and the person running against Dwayne Bohack.
Right, Ken Yarbrough's daughter.
Would have been the same thing, because in those three instances, all Harris County races, the turnout on Election Day, if White is on the ticket as governor, as candidate for governor, will be higher than it would have been certainly if Schieffer had been the nominee. And those guys may get pulled over the line by White's support in Harris County, even if White himself doesn't win.
Yeah, the theory here, I mean, the broad theory is that the governor's race is the one everybody pays attention to. If it's a good fight, more people are drawn to the polls, just like they were in the Democratic primary for governor last year. That if it's a good fight in November, more people are drawn to the polls. And, you know, it's a trickle-down theory of politics. The people below benefit from the trickle.
I'm curious about the rest of the Democratic statewide ticket and what that will look like. There's a lot of talk
What ticket is that?
Exactly. I mean, right now, Mark Katz is running for lieutenant governor.
Barbara Ann Radnofsky is running for attorney general.
Right. Katz of the sandwich fortune here in Austin.
There are a lot of names sort of in the hat. You know, Boyd Ritchie had this meeting. This was like the Godfather movie on Monday. You know, over in Houston, we have Bill White waiting to have a press conference. In Austin, we have Tom Schieffer holding a press conference. And in Dallas, Boyd Ritchie, who's the chairman of the Texas Democratic Party, is meeting in a lawyer's office with the four other Democratic candidates for governor.
Apparently having lost a bet. The only situation in which you'd want to have that meeting is if you did lose a bet.
The cool kids will be at parties in Austin and Houston. You, however, will be.
Pass the sugar to Felix.
It's very hard to engineer a ticket, and it usually doesn't work. And it usually, when it does sort of come together as a ticket, it doesn't come together as a political force. But the idea here was to maybe scatter the field, maybe get a candidate out of the Democratic primary for governor who wasn't cut up in the primary. I don't think anybody's buying right now.
Except for Gilbert, who would make a credible land commissioner candidate.
He ran
for ag commissioner last time, didn't do very well, but at least came out of it with his dignity. And you had a lot of people saying, you know, this guy showed me something that I didn't expect before. When I hadn't heard of him, I didn't know he would do this good. The reality is that except for Gilbert, would the Democrats really want to encourage Kinky to run for controller? Controller with a K, I guess.
Well, yeah.
Or run Felix Alvarado for Supreme Court. I mean, you know, it's not as if this is a great prospecting pool for the rest of the ballot.
Right. I think the idea is, try to get Gilbert on one of the lower statewide positions, and then just try to get everyone else. Try to get Farrukh Shami to not spend $10 million beating the heck out of White.
So some other names floating around, former Congressman Nick Lampson is getting promoted a little bit for controller against Susan Combs. Susan Combs put out a press release that said, you know, there aren't any candidates in my race, but I do have $4 million and I'm ready to fight. Kind of an interesting, you know, knock this block off my shoulder. Mm-hmm. Steve Wolins, former rep from Dallas, has talked about...
Husband of the former mayor of Dallas,
Exactly. Miller. And, you know, Wolins' problem may be that he has to run against his wife, you know, because she's got, you know, some unpopular stuff that she did in Dallas, particularly in South Dallas. But he's been talked about as an AG candidate.
Elliot Shapley
is floating. You know, the conversation was, is he going to run for governor? Is he going to run for lieutenant governor? Is he going to run for AG?
Congress.
Royce West has floated around as an AG candidate. Kirk Watson from Austin and Letitia Vanderpool have been talked about as lieutenant governor
Letitia's being floated as a lieutenant governor candidate, which I think is very interesting.
So this is always the week before. We're in the week before people start filing, you know. So it's the, you know, you're a little kid and you're sitting there with the catalog in your lap. I want this one and this one and this one.
I want to talk about Letitia for a second if we can. Because, you know, there's always been this theory that anybody with a Hispanic surname can get out of a Democratic primary and nobody with a Hispanic surname can get out of a Republican primary, right? So in Letitia's case, I think both unfair, but in Letitia's case particularly, it's a very interesting question because first of all, she's not up in 10.
Right,
it's a free shot for her.
Right, doesn't lose her seat if she runs.
Watson's up in 10. Watson would have to give up his seat to run. Letitia has a free shot to run. Second, as a Latina, she does have a base, both gender and ethnicity, to draw on to potentially get votes. And if you're a Latina, you could not have more of a contrast than running against David Dewhurst.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the reality is she does present an interesting balance to White if White's the nominee and an interesting contrast to Dewhurst if she's in that race. She represents San Antonio, which is also kind of an interesting market, and so South Texas as a potential place to be. And I have to tell you, I think that White could do worse than Vandepute as a running mate. I mean, Shapley is interesting because Shapley is a base-pleasing guy. And Shapley is pugnacious. Shapley has no shortage of things he believes or things he's willing to say.
Especially against a possible Dewhurst opponent.
Especially against Dewhurst. But the question is, he's from El Paso. No statewide candidate from El Paso has ever won election in Texas. El Paso is the other, again, unfair, but it is, politically. I'm not sure that Shapley brings a lot to the ticket that Vandepute would not bring, and I think Vandepute probably brings a lot more.
What's the likelihood of a Vandepute run, though? I mean, she's already been talked up for governor, ruled that out, and kind of backed Kirk Watson instead, which then turned out you know.
It's what Evan said. I mean, it's a free race. She's not, if she gets on the, you know, in Texas, you don't have to resign your current seat to run for this seat. And she's in midterm. So if you lose, you're a senator. If you win, you're a lieutenant governor. And it's not the kind of race that losing necessarily would, is a blot on your political career. I mean, depending on how you conduct yourself in a race and what happens and blah, blah, blah.
You look at Kirk Watson running for attorney general in 02. Came out of that with his hide and his reputation to the point that he's being talked about as a candidate for something high up today.
Right,
losing didn't kill his career.
Right. Politics is full of people who lost and lost and lost and then won. Right.
Barack Obama lost in the primary against Bobby Rush in Chicago.
There you go.
Right.
There you go. Right. Lost a house race, and you know Bobby Rush is still in the house.
and Barack Obama's in the big house.
Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And just with our remaining time, one final angle that I kind of wanted to hit is how a stronger Democratic ticket would affect the Republican primary race, Rick Perry versus Kay Bailey Hutchison.
Well, I guess somebody brought up this week, does this mean that now Hutchison can start running on the I'm more electable idea?
Well, the UT Texas Tribune poll certainly suggested that against the generic Democrat, she was much better off than Perry was.
She runs stronger against the Democrats. You know, we should say here that Texas remains a red state, and this is a Republican election to lose. And,
it's a blue podcast today, but it's
a red state. And so the, you know, White's a better candidate probably for a general election than Schieffer, but still the odds are, you know, against him. The Rick Perry, Kay Hutchison question is interesting. Hutchison runs better against named and unnamed Democrats in the last two polls that have sort of addressed the question. Our poll with UT and the Rasmussen poll, Bill White was not in either of those polls. So Hutchison's take is going to be, I run better in November, go with me. Perry's is going to be what it has been. I mean, you know, she's from Washington and I'm not.
You have to assume that one of the things that White thought about, that the White folks thought about, and it was a calculation they made in the decision to possibly get into the race, is they've decided that the nominee for the Republican Party is going to be Rick Perry. You know, you had a lot of Democrats who said privately and not so privately in the last year, if only you could guarantee me by filing deadline that it would be Rick Perry and not Kay I was running against, I might get in. And so I think in White's case, White certainly would prefer to run against Perry than Hutchison. And I think White must be banking on our poll and the Rasmussen poll and a couple of other private polls that people are alluding to but no one has seen that all say basically 10 to 14 points Perry's ahead of Hutchison. He must be, and they must be, calculating it's going to be Perry. It's going to be Perry.
I think that's a case of be careful what you ask for. The background thing here is White and Hutchison share a lot of support. White's run as a nonpartisan mayor in Houston, and a lot of the Houston business people who are ordinarily Republican and in this case are with Kay are often White supporters. I think the read from those people is let's double down on this thing, and you know we'll have White over here if Hutchison doesn't make it out of the primary.
I wonder though to what degree the Hutchison, this is always the great question. So you got a contested primary, Ben, between Hutchison and Perry. It's going to be hard fought. It's going to be ugly. It's already ugly. Name calling. So the Hutchison people get out of this on the losing end. Let's say, do they channel their anger toward Perry into support for White? Do they stay home, or do they get on the late train?
I think you could see, I mean, especially businesses that were already backing White in the first place as a Houston mayor, you know, you want to have a seat at the table if you actually think there's going to be a change. Of course, if you don't, then what happens there? You've lost two elections in one year.
Well, there's a Dallas-Houston thing here that's always been sort of a subtext in Texas politics. Houston hasn't had a mayor since the last Governor White, hasn't had a governor since the last Governor White, Mark White in the mid-80s. Dallas has had Bill Clements and then George Bush, and you know now they're talking about Kay Hutchison, and you know there's a little bit of that going on here too.
I think the shared White-Hutchison support circle is interesting because that either helps or hurts her in her Republican primary, because those of the Democrats who are kind of, or really not Democrats, but independents who would have been willing to cross over and vote in the Republican primary for Hutchison because there was no race or no game on the Democratic side, are they now going to vote D? And then does she lose that kind of pocket of support she needed in order to possibly make this competitive?
You know, Elise, if only you had a, quote, colleague who was any good at crunching data, it might be interesting to see which donors for Hutchison are also donors for White.
In the works.
Wouldn't it be interesting? And it is.
It is in the works.
You have such a colleague?
I know a colleague like that, yeah.
Okay.
On that note, on behalf of Evan Ross and Ben, I'm Elise Hugh with the Texas Tribune. Thank you for listening to the Thanksgiving edition of the TribCast.